So this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
I still think I got a little situation. So listen to me, sister, listen, maybe you can help. I think I give a lot of fathers my consideration, but not for me, it always seems to be for someone else. Why do people always seem to just be on vacation? What they won't get from me, I don't get anything at all. I'm like a trash can holding all the information.
And a happy Friday! Happy Friday indeed here as Overtime clocks in live from the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville on a gorgeous East Tennessee day here in, at the end of May. Hope everyone listening is doing fantastic heading into this weekend. A short week here at the station is already concluded because we the Godfather was gracious enough to give us that four-day weekend over the Memorial Day holiday. Can't even talk. I'm so excited. It's Friday. Can't even talk. But the weekend is upon us. We are with you up until 8 o'clock tonight, taking you in to another weekend. I'm Tanner Carson. I'm joined by Tucker Holt, executive producer, who's on the board. And holy crap. Look who's to my left here. People watching on Periscope. Take a look to the left here. The golden boy. The hometown hero. Well, it's not technically your hometown, but it's your radio hometown. I would say it's your radio hometown.
I consider it a home. Absolutely.
It's Lucas Panzeca, everyone. Making his return. See, he already made his return to the airwaves here today earlier. All of a sudden, he was like a late out of the bullpen substitution for Rick Butler on Get Blitzed.
I'm double dipping today.
You are, but that's okay. That's okay. You're not doing a whole show here. I'm not going to put you through that torture.
No,
because you already did one show.
Honored to do day one of year two of the Blitz, and honored to come back to our old show. We had some good times on this show.
That's the thing, man. You might have already been on the Blitz earlier today,
right,
but this is your real homecoming here. This is where not only me, but you, Brandon Orrick, a lot of people got their first sample of radio airtime, and we had some memories on Overtime.
Never got to do it in this, I guess it's not new, but improved Fox Sports Knoxville studios, though. But
I keep forgetting how long it's been since you've actually done radio here.
Man, it was 2 years, I guess, when you look at it. 2018, I left in late May, early June to head to the Mid-State. So,
I remember,
we're right there at almost exactly 2 years since that final show. So it's flown by, man.
And then, it's like we did like the studio renovation around that summer as well. And, things have changed a little bit.
No doubt. It's just good to be in a studio with a mic in my face. I don't know the last time I was able to do that. I guess it was early March before this all kind of set in. So it feels good.
It feels like not that long ago that in, end of February, early March, when you were making one of your appearances via phone on this show, that you were talking a whole lot about the excitement that was about to come and with all these events in Nashville, SEC tournament. You already had one home game for Nashville SC in their inaugural MLS season. And, I mean, it was just going to be nonstop. I'm sure you were going to do something with Tennessee in spring practice, orange and white game maybe.
Yeah, mostly, I guess it would have depended on what else was happening around that weekend. But, it was going to be a fun spring, SEC tournament gearing up for Tennessee-Alabama, possible Tennessee-Kentucky rematch, and that all feels like 100 years ago now when you really look at it.
Then some guy had to eat a bat.
Yeah, exactly.
And now here we are.
So, but it is what it is, man, and I'm just glad to be back here with you guys.
Absolutely glad that you are able to, I'll go ahead and say, grace us with your presence, Lucas. It's fantastic. It's good now that, over these past, couple of months now, it's a good thing whenever I can have someone in this chair next to me because limited staff, everyone, it's mostly been me and Tucker doing it when we have had a show. As you know, we had a month and a half hiatus on this program. But we're back, man. Feels really good. And again, you're not joining us for the whole show. You do have business to attend to, and you already did 2 hours of radio today. I'm not going to keep you any longer than you need to, but at least for most of this hour.
Yeah.
You're going to be with us here just long enough to play the birthday game for the first time in 2 years.
Wouldn't miss that. Absolutely.
Are you going to go ahead and call your shot for a win in the birthday game.
Well, I don't know because I'm going up against Tucker, right? I'm not going up against you. So I don't know anything about Tucker's knowledge of birthdays or knowledge of pop culture.
You'll
so.
Probably win, right,
yeah,
Tucker?
Yeah, I'm hit or miss real bad. Like, I very embarrassingly got Justin Verlander wrong. Like, it was months ago and I still
you
remember.
You could not thank for the life of him Justin Verlander.
It
I gave
stings.
Him the Kate Upton hint. I
yeah.
gave him all sorts of hints.
It was awful.
We've had some of those moments, but no, I'm not one to call my shot, but I'll just stay quiet and see what happens.
I know you're confident deep on the inside. you can't lie to me, Lucas. But before we do that, yeah, we'll move the birthday game up an hour early just so Lucas is able to play against Tucker. But before that, man, starting things off today here, how about esteemed journalist Barrett Salee? How about good friend of the station, Barrett Salee, making some SEC record predictions for the 2020 season? And wouldn't you know it, he is pretty hot on the Tennessee Volunteers. I'm going to get the exact graphic so I can have the other programs as well. But just when it comes to Tennessee, he predicts 9-3 overall, 6-2 in the SEC. Good for... At the very least, see, he doesn't have the exact, like, schedule wins and losses. So you kind of have to do some figuring out about it in your head here. Georgia, he's also predicting to go 6-2 in conference. So at best, he's predicting Tennessee to tie for second, or that'd be a third place finish.
Yeah, I've got the wins and losses. He in his article on CBS, it has.
Maybe
his,
I should have clicked and read the whole article.
Our losses are Oklahoma, Bama, and Georgia.
Okay, so that would be a third place finish then.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm injecting that into my veins. It might say, if some Tennessee haters hear us, like, really excited over this, they'll say, oh, Tennessee fans excited over third place finish in the East. That's an upward trajectory.
And it's a fair prediction because I think that should be Tennessee's expectation for this season to have – you know, some type of improvement from a year ago. And when you look at a team last year that with that rally late in the year and you look back to a gaffe against Georgia State and then snatching defeat from the jaws of victory against BYU, it's almost mind-boggling to sit there and think, I mean, this should have been a 10-win team. So, no, I don't think it's ridiculous to say Tennessee goes 9-3, and obviously so much of that comes down to quarterback play, but we were talking about this on the Blitz. When it comes to the SEC East race, I think expectations should be tempered when it comes to Tennessee's involvement in that in 2020. But I think this is fair from Barrett Salee.
What do you find more interesting? Just, you know, Tennessee 9-3, or the fact that, and when you look at their schedule, it begins to make a whole lot more sense, especially with the talent they have coming back. But Barrett Salee predicting Florida 11-1, but of course that one loss being at Tennessee.
Right.
What's more? I don't know. What stands out to you more, that he's predicting a really more successful season for Tennessee or 11-1 for Florida? That's college football playoff contention right there.
Yeah, no doubt. And winning the East over Georgia and headed to Atlanta to play Alabama, that's what he has. And Florida has been, I guess, kind of under the radar throughout this whole offseason. And really, a lot of teams in the SEC have been. You're not hearing a whole lot about Alabama. You're not hearing a lot about Florida. I think Georgia snatched some headlines yesterday with JT Daniels, and Tennessee obviously is making plenty of waves, but Florida's just quietly plugging along, and most opinions, whether you agree with it or not, are that Kyle Trask is the best returning quarterback in the SEC. That seems to be the general consensus amongst media and maybe even fans, that he is the best returning quarterback in the SEC, and they didn't lose a whole lot expecting a good defense to come back. So
the fact that, and I do agree that Kyle Trask is the best returning quarterback in the SEC, I think that says more about the lack of what we know in quarterbacks around the SEC, because no disrespect to Kyle Trask, but I mean, he's the best so far in the conference. I mean,
it's definitely a questionable season when it comes to SEC quarterbacks. A lot of prove it opportunities.
Yes.
Here, when you look, just go down the list. In the West, Alabama, Mac Jones, Auburn, Bo Nix, LSU obviously has questions to answer.
Miles Brennan at LSU, who was a starter as a true freshman before Joe Burrow, of course, took the job away and did what he did. It's going to be a now that I'm thinking about it, it's going to be an intriguing season for just quarterback play in general across the SEC. Have you, I'm sure you've seen a lot of people trying to hype up Terry Wilson at Kentucky as well.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
It's interesting. I think he's a great fit for what they were trying to do, and he's had success there. And look, man, you got to give Kentucky props for what they were able to do with Lynn Bowden Jr. last season, with quarterback after quarterback going down and still managing to squeak out, a 7-win season. So
ball win against Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I think Terry Bowden, to say he would be a top three quarterback in the SEC East is certainly within the realm of possibility, depending on what happens with Jamie Newman. And then you figure in Kyle Trask, what happens at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. There's just so many questions at the quarterback position. I think it's by far the most intriguing position in the SEC for 2020. And we're going to learn more about SEC quarterbacks this year than maybe any other topic in the league.
Let's go back to the Tennessee record prediction here. And, Tucker, I want you to weigh in on this, too. By the way, your mic is working because I was trying that out on the drive, too. So no robo mic tonight.
Yeah, it was really bad yesterday. I'm glad to be able to actually speak instead of being muted the whole time.
Sounds fantastic for sure. Glad we can hear that golden voice. Two golden voices here, Lucas Panzikas and Tucker Holtz. Yeah, guys, both of you, whoever wants to go first when I ask you this here. So the losses that Barrett Slee has in this 9-3 prediction for Tennessee: at Oklahoma, home against Alabama, then at Georgia, and of course the win over Florida. I'm pretty much sure 99.9% of the fan base will take a season in which you beat one of those big four games, right? At Oklahoma, Bama, Georgia, and Florida. If you can just get one of those, that is such a move in the direction of progress. What I'm going to ask you guys is, would you take it being Florida, or would you rather break the streak to Alabama, beat Georgia, and maybe ruin some potential playoff hopes for them in November, or would you want to grab the attention of the college football world early in the season and get a win at Oklahoma? What would you guys take if you had to take one of those, and you could only take one?
Well, that's so tough because early in the year you have these two just massive opportunities to kind of, you know, state your presence in college football. If Tennessee goes into Norman and is able to get a win at Oklahoma, then you are announcing your return, or at least announcing that next big step in your return to relevance. And then if you turn around and beat Florida at home, Tennessee is in everybody's conversations when it comes to college football. But if you limp to a 2-2 start with wins over Charlotte and Furman, losses to OU and Florida, then I think you might see a lot of shades of what happened last season, of Jeremy Pruitt just kind of trying to keep it together. And if they can go the rest of the year with just one loss, of course, that would mean having to squeak one out against Alabama or Georgia. But so it just depends on how you look at it, because last season, the season felt like it was defined by the Georgia State game. The season felt lost by the Georgia State game, and even more so after the BYU game, and that wasn't the case. So it's just, at this point, probably a personal preference thing of who would you rather beat.
How about you, Tucker? Who are you taking out of those four? You have to take one. You can't like roll the dice and try to get two. You have to take one.
I'm okay with us beating Florida. I don't know.
You'd be okay with that?
I would be. Yeah, I'd be fine with it.
Just okay with being a team that's owned or asked for the Bear Bryant 15 years. Yeah. Actually, over a course.
Pretty much that's the reason. Like, in my lifetime, I've hated Florida more. Just because I've been around their fans
as
more.
I say, as they I would assume every younger fan does.
Yeah. I mean, I hate Georgia, but just not like I do Florida. And I just feel like just getting one over on their fans again. Because we're going to, you know, if we beat one this year, it's not going to be the last time we beat one of them. We're going to eventually be able to put this thing. We're going to take another step, I think, each year.
For me, assuming that no matter how you shake it and you're going to lose the other three there, and if Georgia and Florida still have successful seasons, no matter how it shakes out, you'll still not win the East. Hell, go ahead and give me Alabama. I'm taking Bama. I'm absolutely taking them because, yes, would it be nice to, I mean, get that win over Florida, something you don't do a whole lot? Would it be nice to have an upset road win at Georgia? And again, that game's in November now, and who knows how it could potentially affect Georgia's season with the loss to Tennessee. And of course, winning at Oklahoma, that would be great just to bloat about on Twitter, would it not? Just gloating all up and down the timeline. But I'm taking Bama, man, because you, at least for Florida, you ended that long streak. Now they've started like a little one again, but at least you ended it when it got to double digits. What's the damn streak against Bama now? 13?
06 the last time.
I know 06 is the last. Does that make it? Yeah, that makes it 13, right? Or 14.
No, there wouldn't. You can't have a. You wouldn't have a bigger statement than a win over Alabama this season. That would create the biggest statement for Tennessee, and especially with the way they competed last year. They're going to go into that game confident, just like they did a year ago in Bryant Denny with all the lights, the night game. Tennessee came out and at times, at moments, pushed Alabama around a little bit, but at the end of the day, we all know what happened, so we don't need to dive into it. But no, I don't think anything would create a bigger statement for Tennessee this year, and I don't think there's any doubt Jeremy Pruitt wants that game probably more than any other matchup at home. So, if you got to pick one between those four, I think the answer absolutely should be Alabama.
There's so many statements you can make with the Alabama win, right? Not only is it the fact that you finally end this long, long just stretch of getting your ass kicked by them, but you beat Nick Saban, something Tennessee as a program has only done one time. That's when he was back at LSU. That's also sending a message, I think, to the rest of the college football world in general that, hey, Tennessee is not actually messing around. And also sends a message that, from what we've seen recently, is Alabama really the big bully on the block anymore in the SEC? Or are they that clear-cut alpha team in the SEC? That would definitely cause some doubt.
I think there's a feeling that the Alabama dynasty is teetering a little bit, but that's also a dangerous kind of thread to pull, because Alabama has one of the best rosters in college football next season. If Mac Jones can even be serviceable, that's a team that's capable of reaching the playoff.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it's like 100% certain they would go with Mac Jones, or do you think Bryce Young?
Yeah.
Young. I almost wanted to call him Bryce Love, but no, that's a Stanford running back.
Right.
That, Bryce Young.
It would be interesting.
It wouldn't have been the first time that Nick Saban put trust in a true freshman.
Yeah, I don't know that Mac Jones can lead Alabama to a national championship, but Jake Coker led Alabama to a national championship.
We were just talking about Jake Coker yesterday. We had a conversation about, I think a team really needs to have a great quarterback to win a national championship. That's at least what's happened the last four times. And I was like quizzing Tucker and AJ, who was here yesterday. Can you guys name the quarterback of Alabama's 2015 national championship team? And they were struggling.
Could not.
They were struggling to name him.
No.
But sometimes if you have a really good, really elite roster around you, like when Jake Coker had Heisman Trophy winning running back Derrick Henry to give the ball to. Sometimes if you had that elite roster around you, you could just be really serviceable.
Well, that's how Nick Saban built up the Alabama dynasty. And then
Greg McElroy. I mean, that's
Greg McElroy,
AJ McCarron.
There you go. So he built it on game-managing, smart quarterbacks that didn't make dumb mistakes, elite offensive line and running backs, and just shut down defenses. But Nick Saban, being the great he is, obviously adjusted his way of bringing in offensive coaches, his whole philosophy on offense, mm-hmm. and boom, fast forward a couple years, Alabama has the most exciting offense in college football by a pretty large margin, at least in the SEC, and Tua Tagovailoa is the most dynamic quarterback in college football for a hot minute, and Jalen Hurts is in that conversation for a while. So I find it hard to think Alabama would go back to that, which is why I feel like Bama fans are probably more inclined to want Bryce Young to step in, just like Tennessee fans want Harrison Bailey to come out and be everything that they expect him to be. So that's what's going to be so fascinating. I mean, not only is the quarterback topic interesting this season, but just in quarterback battles for some specific programs like Alabama, like Georgia, if JT Daniels is eligible, just going to be fascinating to watch. It's just the question is, how much are we even going to be able to find out about it, depending on the pandemic and how everything plays out in the preseason?
Let me read you Barrett Slee's analysis of his record prediction, by the way. Barrett Slee wrote, "The Volunteers should be stout along the offensive line, have firepower in the backfield, and a defense that has taken on the mentality of Coach Jeremy Pruitt. The quarterback position might not be completely set, but Jared Garantano at least provides some experience, unless the potential of another contender is enough to unseat him." Okay, Harrison Bailey, most likely. And Brian Maurer still does exist, too. Let's not forget about that. They draw Arkansas as a rotating cross-division opponent and have a tune-up versus Furman prior to the home game versus Florida on September 26th. It sets up well for a team that's clearly on the rise after reeling off six straight wins to end last season. Any thoughts on what he said about that?
No, I mean, it sounds about right. This defense did take on the mentality of Jeremy Pruitt in the back half of the year, and it's just going to come down to quarterback play, man. Plain and simple, barring unforeseen circumstances, injuries, it's just going to come down to quarterback play.
And that's one of the many differences between where Tennessee is right now versus, obviously, Alabama. There's obviously more differences between those two programs right now, but Alabama, they have the roster to where they could have a game manager go 12-0. Who knows what would happen in the playoff, but they would certainly have the team to carry a game manager quarterback, let's be honest. That's the difference in Tennessee. Tennessee's the rest of the roster may be on the rise. They may be improved. Like Bertsley mentioned, the backfield. You're going to have Eric Gray and a host of others back in that backfield. The defense is getting tougher every season. It's very evident. The thing is, you probably need a really good quarterback play if you want to really, really upset some of these teams. That's one of the differences. Last question I'll ask you guys before we hit this first break here. So I already asked you guys out of the big four games, which one would you most like to have? Now I'm going to ask you, to be honest with yourselves, which one of those is the most feasible to get a win at Oklahoma, home against Bama and Florida and at Georgia? Which is the most likely win?
I think it's at Oklahoma. I'm willing to say it's at Oklahoma because a lot of question marks about Oklahoma. The future looks bright that the Spencer Rattler, I believe,
yes,
Rattler. Unless the name is escaping me.
No, you're right.
He's going to come in, and that's only his second game in charge. And I don't remember who Oklahoma opens up with, but Tennessee, you would think, had learned their lesson with Georgia State last year, and opening up with Charlotte should be ready for that game and ready to try and make a statement. I just think Tennessee would be more prepared to beat Oklahoma out of the Big 12 than to take down Florida, Georgia, or Alabama.
Oklahoma opens with Missouri State.
Okay.
So there you go. Tucker, how about you? Which one do you think is the most realistic?
I agree. I think we'll come out with some like really strong, just passion, firepower, way more compared to what we did against Georgia State and BYU. I think we're going to see a more motivated team than we did last year at all. Pruitt's going to have them ready to go this year. And I think, going into Oakland, they're going to know that that can be a statement win, and they're going to want to set the tone for the rest of the season. I think you'll see a great showing for the Vols that game.
I will say before we hit this first break, I have one of my good friends, and he told me this back in like February. He was just convinced. He thinks the most realistic out of the four is Alabama. No joke.
When you just look at...
He tried to convince me. He's convinced enough from what we almost did in Tuscaloosa.
Right. And when you just look at games from last season, considering what happened with Georgia and Florida, then I guess that's fair from that standpoint.
What if Pruitt is the first former Saban assistant to finally beat him? What if it's Pruitt? What if it's old Skull Can?
It happens this season, I think. It may not be Pruitt.
There's a lot of chances. If not Pruitt, he does face Georgia at home, though.
Right, but. And that's an early season game. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M may not be there yet, but will be a threat. That game will be in Tuscaloosa, though. So I think it does finally happen this season.
Quick quiz. Do either of you know the last time Georgia played in Tuscaloosa? Do you know what year it was?
I have no idea.
Guess. Guess a year.
06.
Tucker, guess a year.
03.
You were closer, Lucas. It's 07.
07.
Georgia's not playing.
I just remember the blackout game in Athens, yes. Which I guess would have been 08, maybe.
Yes, where they got humiliated.
Yeah, right. And that game had a lot of hype, top 10 matchup. But okay, 07, last time in Tuscaloosa.
Wow.
All righty. Well, we're going to hit this first break. When we come back, we're moving the birthday game up an hour. It's going to be Lucas's first time playing the game in 2 years. Wow. I never thought he'd make a comeback on the birthday game. It's going to be Lucas versus Tucker. This should be interesting when we come back here on Overtime.
Time to play the game. It's all about the game. And how you play it, all about control. And if you can take it, all about your debt. And if you can pay it, it's all about
it is time. This might be the most excited I've been in a while to moderate a birthday game. Lucas has been going so long. He's been gone so long that
I'm rusty for sure.
That he didn't even remember that I was moderating now. I was the judge.
When's the last time you participated?
I don't know, man. It's been a minute. Like, I'm open to not looking at the birthdays for a specific day and letting, like, someone else moderate. I'm open to playing it again, but it's just, it's never happened.
Next time we have a guest, let me moderate. I'll do it. That'd be fun.
I'm down.
Cool.
Lucas, a lot of times, it's just, there's been no competition. I've just had
Yeah, it's too easy. But the moderating can be fun to come up with the clues. Because that takes, just as much knowledge if you don't have to look it up and all that.
That's true. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's been tough sometimes because sometimes it's just me quizzing Tucker.
Yeah, that's
He's not really playing. He's just trying to get him himself.
Well, I remember before every show, you, me, and Brandon back there, and Brandon was always the moderator.
Yep.
We would ask, good or bad day for birthdays? Is it a good or bad day?
So since today is Friday and I'm going to use birthdays from Saturday, it's pretty good. I'm going to be honest with you, man. I'm still trying to get the last for tomorrow down.
What kind of realm of pop culture are we entering here?
It's a pretty good day. I mean, this is kind of diverse here. I've got politics. I have sports. I have a comedian. I have an actress here. More music, so
all right,
it's
pretty
good. It's pretty good. I'll add some for tomorrow as I go along. Let's go ahead and get started with today's. So there's four for today. I'm gonna try to get one more for tomorrow and make it a best out of seven. So let's start with today, guys. First up, he's 45 today. He's an American stand-up comedian, TV show host. I don't even know if he has a show anymore on Central.
TV show host.
Yes.
Like sitcom.
Daniel Tosh.
It's Daniel Tosh.
Wow. Yeah. 45.
Lane Kiffin.
No.
Lane, he's not a fan of Lane Kiffin.
He looks just like him.
Remember Kiffin's Crimson Quarter?
I do.
Well, Kiffin's bulked up a little bit. He doesn't really look
like him
anymore.
He's put on some weight. It's hard to compare him now, but I wonder what Daniel Tosh is up to nowadays. He's kind of falling off. Is Tosh.0 still on the air?
I think it is.
Is it?
I mean, either they're still running reruns.
It is.
I was about to say.
From June 4th, 2009 till present.
I could not tell you the last time I watched an episode of that.
The 12th season premiered back on March 17th.
12 seasons.
Right when Rona kicked off.
Good
I actually caught a rerun not too long ago. Really? If it was recent, they're still pretty good.
Yeah. Good for him, man.
There you go. Well, Tucker on the board first. Next up.
I'm sorry. How many do we have today so I know where we're at in terms of.
Well, just for today, we have three more. And I'm trying to get one more from tomorrow to make it a best out of seven series.
All right.
Still a long way to go. 36 today. 36. He is an NBA player. He is still active. He is. And man, this is another thing. It's if the NBA season didn't get, cut short, like right in the middle of everything, who would have known how the rest of. The season would have panned out for him, which, I mean, there will be a season resuming, of course, but it's on hold for now. He's with the Trailblazers right now. He has played on teams such as the Rockets, the Thunder, the Nuggets, and the New York Knicks. He's a 10-time All-Star.
Melo.
It is Carmelo Anthony.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I just
one of the best to never win a ring.
Carmelo Anthony in a Trailblazer uniform.
Double
yeah,
zero.
That's what I
still
was just
like.
Doesn't
strike me. All right.
I was just trying to think about it like an older guy on the Trailblazers.
Clearly, I am rusty.
It's Melo. I mean, still in one's game. Maybe this could set up a nice comeback when it's all said and done. All right. The next one for today is also a basketball player. He is currently a member of the Magic. He was the first overall pick in 2017 for the 76ers.
Markelle Fultz.
It is Markelle Fultz. And then just stuff happened to his arm and his shoulder.
And then he forgot how to shoot a basketball.
Heard the Talk Sports guys bring him up as I was leaving the station earlier today. So maybe it was just in my brain.
Maybe. Yeah, 22 Markelle Fultz. All right, 2-1 lead for Tucker. Here's the last one for today. He would have been 103 today. He was an American politician, and he was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate before being elected the 35th president of the United States. And he is a veteran of World War II in the Navy.
Eisenhower.
Oh, I was about to say Eisenhower.
It is not Dwight Eisenhower. He was assassinated.
Kennedy. No, not Kennedy.
Yeah, it's
Kennedy.
Yeah, you got it.
He was a veteran of World War II?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
See, that was throwing me off.
I don't know how I never knew that.
It's Jack Kennedy, yeah.
Happy
He's in the Navy. He was, Let's see. During World War II, he commanded a series of PT boats in the Pacific.
Wow.
And earned the Navy and Marine Corps Medal for his service.
I did not know that.
Jack Kennedy, yep.
Yeah, I knew he was in, like, the Navy, but I didn't know he was in the Navy.
World War II, man.
I didn't know that timeline matched up. Mm-hmm. Okay.
There you go. R.I.P. JFK visited Dallas last summer, assassination site.
Go to that spot.
And the school book depository, man, that's a somber place.
Yeah, no doubt.
So
I've been there.
And years before that, in 2014, I went to D.C. for a day and went to Arlington, saw his grave. So I've seen his grave and also where he was assassinated. It's something, man.
Yeah, that grave in Arlington is something
Eternal
else.
Flame, him
yeah.
and Jackie buried next to each other.
Yeah.
That's do y'all find that strange off the top of your head that they're buried next to each other when they got, well, I mean, obviously, I mean, she had to remarry after he got assassinated, but.
That's yeah, the most, arguably the most iconic political couple.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean,
who's up there?
I mean, it makes sense. I'm not saying it doesn't, but I'm like, well, I mean, she also went by another last name for the rest of her life. So I don't know. You're saying other.
I was next to.
Well, Barack
the
and Michelle. Barack and Michelle.
Yeah.
Like political couples.
Well, I guess that that's a long list.
I don't know. That's not at the top. It depends on who you define as iconic.
Yeah.
Some political parties might, you know, have other couples as iconic and some not. So I guess it's just subjective.
Yeah.
But either way, Lucas, you've tied this up at 2 going until tomorrow. You were concerned about being all rusty and everything. Look at you. Haven't really missed a beat. Have not really missed a beat. I'm trying to find one more for tomorrow. Were you about to say something?
No.
Oh, well, I was complimenting you. I thought you were going to say thank you, Tanner.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, I found one. Found one for tomorrow. So 3 more tied at 2. Tomorrow, she will be 49 years old. This may be a tough one. This may be a tough one. You're definitely familiar with her work. I don't know if you all will know her name or not. She's an American actress, singer, and songwriter. She's been a performer on the Broadway stage, but when it comes to films and television, she's known for her role as Shelby Corcoran on Glee. She also, in film, let's see, she was Nancy Tremaine in the 2007 Disney live-action animated film Enchanted. And she's probably most known, however, for voicing Queen Elsa in Frozen and singing Let It Go. She is the singer of Let It Go.
I know. I'm picturing her in my brain.
You're familiar with the work.
Blonde.
John Travolta famously botched her name at the Grammys, I think, or the Oscars, trying to introduce her.
Yeah, it's a tough one to say.
It's a tough
it?
One.
Yeah. I think it's got.
I'll give it to whoever's like close, or like in the ballpark. Do I need to give initials? I think I need to give initials.
Give initials.
Maybe, yeah.
I am.
I'm out.
Oh, he's not even going to try. Come on, Tucker.
Isn't it like, let's go with like, Isabel?
No.
No, you're not getting it. Idina Menzel.
No, not a chance.
Never, yeah.
Idina Menzel.
Wasn't happening.
All right, still tied at 2. He'll be 45 tomorrow.
That is not the person that I was picturing.
Who were you picturing?
Another blonde actress that was in Glee that I thought did musical stuff. I don't know.
All right, still tied at 2. He'll be 45 tomorrow. Another American musician. He is a singer, rapper, composer, and record producer. He is known for his work in soul music.
Except 45?
He'll be 45 tomorrow, yeah. Including the hit singles Crazy and Forget You.
CeeLo Green.
It's CeeLo Green. Tucker gets it. See you driving around.
Oh, man. Well earned. I can't believe I didn't remember CeeLo Green.
Forget You. Yeah, that's what he was really saying. Yep, CeeLo.
God, that song is so old now.
You're making me feel old. I was still in high school.
I was in seventh grade.
Is it really that way? I thought.
I remember that song being out when I was in middle school, at minimum.
Oh, it's older than I thought it was.
Yeah.
2010. Why was I thinking it was 2013?
That would have been my freshman year of high school.
That would have been my sophomore year. Okay. All right. Well, Tucker is now up 3-2. We have one more birthday. So, Lucas, if you get this birthday, I'm going to have to look up a This Day in History tiebreaker. So, here we go. For a potential tiebreaker or a win for Tucker, He will be 28 tomorrow. He is an NBA player, American. He played his college basketball at UNC. He currently plays for the Kings. However,
Quinn Cook.
No, he is also
he played at Duke.
Yeah, he has also played for the Mavericks and the Warriors, winning an NBA championship with the Warriors in 2015. He was a first-round pick in 2012.
Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes.
For the wow. Dub, Tucker Holt. Oh, Lucas, you were a little rusty.
Well done. Yeah.
Being a Warriors fan helped out a little. I was like, who's on that 2015 roster?
Harrison
Tucker,
Barnes.
You just beat one of the all-time birthday champs. I want you to know this is a momentous occasion.
I've been studying, training. Everything has
training.
Led up to this moment.
Does that mean you were looking up the names?
No, I've been doing the birthday game every day for like the last 6 months. Except
is that really training though?
I mean, it's gets you thinking,
keeps you sharp.
Sure.
I know whose birthdays have already happened.
Well, the triumphant return falls a little short for Lucas.
That's okay.
That's
a good day. That's a good day of birthdays. Some challenging ones, some not as challenging ones with Kennedy, CeeLo. I should have gotten. And who was the first one?
God, who was?
Who was the first one?
I don't think y'all got it.
Did I get it?
Yeah, you got the first two.
Well, there was
Mello was one of them.
Yeah.
Well, there was one y'all like didn't get.
That was
right.
That was the Frozen Idina Menzel or whatever.
I thought there was another one y'all didn't get.
I don't know.
I've already forgotten. This is bad. All I know is Lucas, in your comeback here, you were less like Michael Jordan in 1996 and more like Michael Jordan in 2003
with the Wizards. Yeah. Wizards MJ.
I had to do it. Just for fun. I wonder what happened on this day in history. Oh, Sir Edmund Hillary reached the Mount Everest summit this day in 1953.
Glad we didn't have to figure that one out.
Yep. And a Sherpa from Nepal, they become the first explorers to reach the summit of Mount Everest. I bet that was just terrifying. I mean, trying to hike Everest is something that's terrifying anyway.
Oh, yeah, because
people still die all the time trying to
You know
to
when you're going
summit.
Up, I mean, there's people's jobs to go up there and get, like, dead
bodies.
Dead
yeah.
bodies.
There's some bodies that you can't retrieve.
They don't decompose. They're just frozen.
With their
and you're
clothes.
Like, and you're just trekking. It's like, oh, there's third dead guy I've seen the past mile. Yeah. Doesn't sound like a fun day.
Takes a special breed of human.
Yeah.
Can y'all guess what state entered the Union on this day in 1848? The 30th state. It's in the Midwest.
Missouri.
Mm-mm.
I'm going to go Kansas.
Nope.
Nebraska.
No.
Idaho.
It's Idaho in the Midwest, Tucker.
It's close enough.
It's Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin. This day in 2005, Danica Patrick becomes the first woman to lead the Indy 500.
Nice.
Good for her.
I think I watched that live.
Then she went to NASCAR and just wrecked everyone.
Yeah.
Other than that, not too much else went on this day, May 29th. But yeah, glad that Lucas came back for the birthday game.
That was fun.
It was very fun indeed. You're going to be with us for one more segment before
let's do it.
You say sayonara. Well, we're going to make it a good one. We're going to make it a good one indeed. Open up these phone lines as well. 865-546-8200 if you would like to join us on this Friday evening. 546-8200. We will close out hour number one of overtime when we return. All right, we're back here for the final segment, hour number one of overtime on this Friday. Got that Friday feeling. Ooh, feeling really good. I have the George Jones song in the back of my head. Finally Friday. Talk Sports plays every week. I'm pretty sure they still play that as a bumper. Do you remember?
I don't remember it from my time as an intern.
No, it's very catchy. Love some good George Jones. Love a good Friday feeling. I tell you who doesn't have the Friday feeling today. That's Roger Goodell. Listen to this coward. Listen to this. Some breaking news. Sports Business Daily, they were the first to tweet this out here. The NFL will not allow Dave Portnoy, El Presidente of Barstool Sports, to watch a Monday Night Football game with Roger Goodell, despite Dave Portnoy being the high bidder for that exact experience during the NFL's charity auction to support COVID-19 relief during last April's draft. The league said today, Portnoy, who won the auction, would get this $250,000 bid. He failed a background check. Failed a background check that was a precondition to follow through on the invite to Roger Goodell's home for a game. This is according to NFL VP of Communications Brian McCarthy. The background check noted Portnoy's multiple encounters with NFL security and the 2011 incident in which he posted a nude photo of Tom Brady's then 2-year-old son on Barstool. They are nitpicking so hard.
Oh, bad.
I would like to imagine the look on Goodell's face when he received the news that Portnoy was the high bidder. And he said, no, we cannot let this happen. We are going to turn over every rock to make sure we have some excuse for this to not happen.
Dave Portnoy knew this wasn't going to happen, and it was just a move on his part to look good by donating to charity and at least give himself a shot to be next to the commissioner, but something that he knew there was no way that the NFL would allow, which in turn would only end up in making him look like the winner in this scenario, making the NFL look a little bit cowardly. So smart move by Dave Portnoy. It was never going to happen. But here you go.
I wanted to live stream at that if that was going to happen, just because you know it was going to start out kind of cordial, but then eventually as it progressed, someone was going to make a comment, and it was just Portnoy would probably have to be kicked out by like personal security at Goodell's home. It would have unraveled into a crap show of proportions we have not seen before.
Well, from what we saw of Roger Goodell in the NFL draft, I mean, that's the most you've seen him in, I guess you could say, a personal setting, right? Yeah. Of not the painted over commissioner suit that everybody boos. You saw a little bit of, you saw his basement. He said he was fixing windows in his home.
He was getting so tired of announcing picks. He was just probably
laid back
in his chair.
Yeah, he did a little bit. He did some bits here and there and whatnot. But to put him with a guy like Portnoy that is so combative and witty, which Roger Goodell obviously is not, from what we've learned this year. There's just no way that Goodell would have won in this situation. It probably would have been a whole lot worse for him personally if they had invited Portnoy into his home.
Well, that's what would have made it great, though, right?
Absolutely. Everybody would love to see it, but this was a no-brainer for the NFL, and I definitely believe Dave Portnoy is smart enough to know that this was never going to happen.
The league also, and there's more Portnoy NFL type of incidents here. They also pointed to his arrest in 2015 for trespassing at the NFL's Park Avenue HQ during the Deflategate scandal, and trespassing in 2016 that he posted online. Also, the league noted incidents at Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta back in 2019. Remember this? He falsified credentials for the opening night media interviews and then violated a ban by attending the game itself later that week.
And he got kicked out, and he went limp, and they had to drag him up the stairs. It was amazing. They had both of his arms, and you see his legs just flop on the stairs, and he made them drag him up the stairs.
So was it media day or the game itself? He had like the fake mustache and the disguise.
I think both. I know we had it at the game, and then the Pardon My Take guys, like, for years have been like sneaking into media days
all the time.
So, and then also, during Deflategate, I think, he also, to Roger Goodell as he was walking away, called him a Nazi. So, they probably don't fly with that either.
But the good news is the money will still go to charity.
They are going to, the NFL is going to take that $250,000. They're going to divide it among 6 charities for COVID relief.
And Dave Portnoy, like I said, he knew this was going to happen. He knew this would only put him in a position to look better than Roger Goodell, because he knew the NFL wasn't going to just sit there and turn away $250,000.
Yeah.
And so a smart play by Dave Portnoy, and you got to give him props.
I've yet to listen to the audio of this, but just 26 minutes ago, Portnoy tweeted out an emergency press conference. He's in Florida, so I don't know where in Florida. He is shirtless in swim trunks next to, I don't know, this ocean he's next to or some lake or something, with the caption, emergency press conference, Goodell is a coward, hates charity, hates kids.
He probably had this pre-filmed.
Goodell. Oh,
he had to know this
well,
was
like
coming.
Well, like Lucas, you already been saying, he knew this was coming. Yeah. So he's like, how am I going to take perfect advantage of when this is official? When the NFL officially tells me that, no, you cannot watch a football game in Goodell's home.
Yeah, there's like 10 different cuts of this video that he's filmed over the last month.
let's say hypothetically this did end up happening. What types of things do you think Portnoy would have done in Goodell's house? We probably would have peed on his toilet seat. Probably would have not flushed a toilet. What, made a sandwich in his kitchen, threw the cheese wrapper on the floor, leave the fridge door open, put his muddy and dirty shoes on his couch a la Rick James in the Chappelle Show.
I think he would have been cordial and as professional as he could have been and let Roger Goodell slip up somewhere or let him look like the bad guy. You know what I mean? It would have been interesting, but there was always a 0% chance of this happening.
While we're talking about Barstool and Lucas, before you head out here, man, again, we appreciate you dropping back by here, returning to your roots on overtime for the first time in 2 years. I gotta ask you again. I've already asked you when you were on the phone with us the last time, but now that he has the Vols at 8-0, thoughts on Coach Duggs in the now top 10 Tennessee Vols after waxing South Carolina today, even though Coach Doug's kind of stupid near the end, trying to go for that 50 burger.
I'll be honest, I did not take in any of that today. What is next, Alabama?
Alabama's next, man. The big one, because you know Alabama's a 9-9 overall in NCAA 14.
What's their – well, but these are fictitious rosters, right? They might be a 99 in NCAA 14, but
they're a 99 at this point in his dynasty.
Are they undefeated? Is it a battle of undefeateds as well?
I'll have to check real quick. I'm going to assume – it's going to be something like that, but man, it's university still went all in on the Ducks thing. Big Cat's been wearing full Tennessee gear. He's even still wearing the gear when he's doing some other podcast after that, even if it's just for a short time. Love Big Cat temporarily adopting Tennessee. Loving the Ducks thing. Have you thought about buying a shirt? Buying some of the officially licensed merchandise?
I haven't. It's still just something to process that Barstool Sports is selling officially licensed Tennessee merch.
It's a thing, man. Let's see. I mean, this is crazy. You have Maryland football tweeting out something about Duggs. The game of the century. Oh, Duggs versus Scott Van Pelt in a game of NCAA 14.
Yeah, in their most recent podcast, they had Scott Van Pelt on. And he talks about how he's also made a coach on NCAA 14.
I love it.
And he is the head coach at Maryland.
Of course he is.
But he juiced his stats, he said. He even admitted to it.
What a fraud.
Yeah. While he accused Big Cat of doing the same.
SVP, you bald fraud. How dare you. Well, Lucas, man, we have reached the end of hour one. You go have fun where you're staying in Knoxville. I know you're grabbing dinner. We're going to hold the fort down one more hour here. Sorry you couldn't win in birthdays, but hey, can't get a dub all the time.
Next time. I can't come to Knoxville without swinging by the station a couple of times. So appreciate you guys having me. Absolutely, just great, man. To see everybody, man.
Absolutely, man. Glad to have you back. Well, we're going to take this end of hour break and come back with hour two. On the other side, we are with you until 8 o'clock. For Lucas Panzeca, Tanner Carson, Tucker Hull with you for one more hour here. Catch you on the other side for more overtime.